This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is The Morning Run, and you're here with Lynn Rushen and Noel. In about half an hour, we're going to be discussing the affordable housing conundrum with Hamid Abdul-Majid, Managing Director of Think City. We're also running a poll over on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, asking you, how can we solve the issue of affordable housing? Is it through government-subsidized housing, subsidized loans for B40s, encouraged rentals, or something else? And if you vote for others, let us know what you're thinking about. But in the meantime, we're focusing on the Malaysian economy. Because back in March, the World Bank Group said Malaysia was likely to become a high-income economy between 2024 and 2028. Considered quite an achievement, seeing as the government aimed to hit this threshold by 2020 under the 10th Malaysia Plan back in 2010.
Yeah, so just looking at other statistics here, Bank Negara estimates that the potential growth has actually fallen by 1.3% to 3.5% from 4.8% before the crisis. So you have now the situation of a slower growth. What does this mean for our aspirations to become a high-income economy? But I think really the pertinent question for this morning, economist Jeffrey Williams from Malaysia University of Science and Technology pointed out in an op-ed that implications of lower potential growth, including unemployment and further contraction of fiscal space, are some issues that we need to pay more attention to.
So Jeffrey Williams joins us now on the line to expand on this discussion. Thanks for speaking with us today, Jeffrey. So let's address your argument that the focus on being a high-income nation is not the ultimate goal, because classifying countries into income group, according to some economists, has no particular meaning whatsoever. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, I think the issue from an economics perspective is that this classification of high-income, middle-income or low-income doesn't really have very much economic content to it. It's really better viewed as a technical classification to decide which countries can receive development finance assistance from the International Development Agency. That's really the reason why we do it. Because if you look, for example, at the economies that are in the high-income category, we can see, for example, some economies are high-income, according to the World Bank definition, but they are low development economies, according to the United Nations. For example, the oil-rich economies in the Middle East are in that category, where they're high income but they're low development. We also know that there are economies which are high income but are very unequal in terms of the distribution of the income. And the United States, for example, is a classic example of that. It's a very high income economy. But recently, the World Bank did a report in part of the United States in West Virginia and Appalachia, where they said that the living conditions of people in that part of the United States, one of the quintessential high-income economies, actually their living conditions was third world in terms of how the growth and development experience of the United States had helped them. So putting countries into this classification doesn't help us really to understand what is the actual growth and development status of the economy. And to that extent, if you use it as a target, you might you risk the danger of taking your eye off the development challenges. That's the real concern.
So, Professor, with that in mind, I guess we need to look at different measures. What would those measures be? Because at the end of the day, we do need to quantify these things in the sake of management and growing them. What would better measures be when it comes to development of a nation?
Well, income is clearly a very important measure, for sure. But it's not just the level of the income, it's the distribution of income, which is extremely important. We don't want to have an economy where on average income is very high, but most of that income is in the hands of a very small group of billionaires and the mass of the population is actually very, very poor. So we need to look at income distribution. That's a basic measure. But I think also we need to look at some indicators of broader welfare outcomes. Are people employed? Are they employed in valuable jobs? Are they employed in jobs which are offering them a stable income rather than precarious freelance-type work? These types of indicators are also very important. The United Nations looks, of course, at social indicators, outcomes in terms of healthcare, outcomes in terms of education. outcomes in terms of diversity and inclusion of people from different social groups and gender and age and ethnicity and people with disabilities and things like that, and how they are included in the overall economic benefit of the growth and development that you're trying to achieve. So we need a much broader categorization before we can say that we have been successful in terms of the policy outcome.
In this regard, how well would you say Malaysia is doing in providing job stability and access to high quality jobs?
Well, under the current conditions, obviously, there are real challenges there. I mean, even in the headline figure for unemployment is going up and down a little bit. But what the real issue is not the headline figure for unemployment in Malaysia. The real issue is the underemployment and the transition that we have seen, forced transition that we have seen for many people out of stable jobs with monthly salaries on which they can rely into what we call the precarious jobs, low income jobs where you're not able to guarantee your daily or your weekly or your monthly salary, freelance work, gig economy work. These type of things are clearly a phenomenon that we are all observing now. Some of us are experiencing it. And the real danger is that that becomes the new normal, because if that becomes the new normal, it means that even if the economy is growing, there will be a very large number of people who won't necessarily benefit from that, because they'll be in types of employment which can't capture the value that is being created by growth and development.
So, Jeff, when we talk about these high rates of unemployment and the crucial underemployment factor here as well, what kind of public policies should we be pushing for then to try and turn things around?
Well, clearly we need to deal with the overall growth trajectory, because as you've mentioned, there are some concerns around the forecasts that we're seeing. Some of the forecasts are very optimistic. But then when you look at the underlying and potential growth rate, even Bank Negara, which is very consistent with our analysis, has said that the underlying growth rate for the economy after the crisis will be much lower than it was before. So we need to try to do something to focus on the underlying growth rate. And what that means is creating opportunities for the economy to generate growth. That would mean new opportunities for startups, new opportunities for scale-ups, more focus on not just high-tech investments, which are important. They are clearly very important, but also to focus on types of jobs which resist high technology, and we need to try to find jobs that can add value even if there isn't a particularly high level of technological input into those types of jobs. So this is actually a real challenge. It's sort of easy to say that this is what we have to do, but how you do that in practice is really quite challenging. But it really is a focus on new businesses, growing existing businesses, those startups and scale-ups, and looking at value added in jobs that resist technological change.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Jeffrey. That was Jeffrey Williams, economist at Malaysia University of Science and Technology, giving us some insight into his thoughts surrounding whether or not the focus on income as a marker of growth is an accurate depiction of the growth of the economy. So he makes an interesting point about perhaps opening up the business ecosystem and also looking at ways to boost jobs that are resistant to the encroachment of technology. Right now, we're about to head into the 7:30 news bulletin, though. But then up next, we're looking at developments in India and the political future of Prime Minister Narendra Modi after his party's defeat in state elections. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.